Judiciary Committee to order at 11:25. For the record, we have an attendance representing Berkowitz, Meyer, Coghill, Rothberg, James, and Kukesh. We have a quorum to do business. We have before us HB 4, and I would move to adopt the committee substitute of House Bill 4, Judiciary 22LS0046/B4. 4201. Is there any objections to adopting the committee substitute?
Just, I want to, for the record, be clear that this version essentially incorporates all the amendments we've been working on.
Right, that's correct, except for this other amendment we have in front of us that I think is a clarifying amendment from the drafter that he didn't pick up on Amendment 36, and that's why it's before us. But, is there any objections then to adopting the committee substitute? Seeing none, we'll adopt the committee substitute B. And then we have before us an amendment from the drafter to be offered by myself. I'd offer the amendment to be marked as amendment number one. I'll move amendment one, number one, and object for discussion.
I'll object for the discussion of
Ms. Seitz, you just briefly describe what the amendment's intended to do, and then we'll talk about the word.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Janet Seitz, representing Rothberg's office. The concept of the amendment was contained in Amendment Number 36, and it got deleted when the Judiciary Committee substitute was prepared. 4A is on a second offense. The forfeiture or impoundment shall be ordered by the court. 4B is on your third or subsequent offense, it's forfeiture, Mr. Chairman.
Right, I think that was the intention of the committee.
And this amends both the DUI section and the refusal section so that they
both. So it's 030 and 032 and refusal. That's why it's repeated. And the question is whether we need the word and on line 10 and line 24. I think it should be disjunctive or deleted in its entirety. It's a matter of drafting style. Mr. Guinelli, do you have an opinion?
Mr. Chairman, I think you're right. I think and is incorrect, and whether it's nothing or whether it's or, it probably amounts to the same thing, or would probably be clearer for most people.
I'd like to probably then offer a conceptual amendment to the drafter to get it right by either deleting or adding the word or do we want to be more specific?
Or is good.
I'd like to go for
both ors in the water here.
We'll put two ors in the water. Well then, Representative Berkowitz, if you want to make an amendment to the amendment, I'll withdraw mine.
No, I'm quite willing to let someone else's amendment pass, Mr. Chair.
No, the amendment to the amendment.
The amendment is on lines 10 and 24, delete and insert or.
Any objections to the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, that's adopted. We have the amendment before us. Representative Coghill, you want to remove your objection?
Yeah, I'll remove
it. I still have an objection. I want to discuss this just a little bit. We're still operating under mandatory forfeiture here.
That's correct on the third offense.
And on the second.
I think it becomes discretionary to the judge. That's what we're doing this amendment.
Well, it's either they shall forfeit the vehicle or they shall immobilize it.
Right. But there's further provisions for the co-owner and everything else to get a release. Is that not true, Ms. Dice? All right. Maybe there isn't in this case, though. Let's see.
I think we took those out, did we not, when we deleted the forfeiture program?
Don't know.
There's no discretion at the third time.
Right. Thank you, Ms. Marshburn. So if it's immobilized, it's immobilized.
But the I guess what I'm hearing Ms. Marshburn say is that the provisions to allow a co-owner or a third party to
well, for licensing and for the license plates are in the bill.
But not for the this forfeiture.
Not for the immobilization. Well, the forfeiture is, yeah, it would be, they would have the third party co-owner and so forth. That's because that's in the current forfeiture law. Is it not, or no?
Only in the municipality of Anchorage. I don't believe we have a current forfeiture law.
Ellie, can you help us, or do you know? It's, I know. Are you still?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. What is
we're talking about forfeiture now. If in fact do we, by adopting this amendment, we leave the judge without a provision to allow the a co-owning spouse or another co-owner to obtain the automobile.
It's my opinion, and it's been in my testimony on other forfeiture bills that the courts not only always have the discretion, but really have the duty to protect the interests of innocent owners. An innocent owner is different from a co-owner, but I think if the co-owner is an innocent owner, we cannot constitutionally take their interest in a car or any piece of property. So I think that always exists. I thought that there were some provisions.
We had them before, but they may have been removed when we did not adopt the civil proceedings. So, well, what I would like to do is just adopt, let's clean up this amendment, and then we'll take up a conceptual amendment to instruct the drafter to make sure that those provisions are either in law now or give the judge the ability to have that. I think that would satisfy that.
Under Title IV, Mr. Chair, there's a discussion of forfeiture under Title IV actions, and there's, I think, a fairly extensive description of how to proceed with the forfeiture in those cases.
That's what we defaulted back to the criminal forfeiture, and there should be procedures already. I think that there probably is, but just in case, if we have a conceptual amendment instructing the drafter to make certain that the ability of the innocent co-owner and the other owners' interests can be preserved there, even in an impoundment situation. I think that would that satisfy the committee?
Satisfies me.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, then let's adopt amendment number one. And then we can make that conceptual amendment. We'll adopt amendment number one. If there are any further objections to amendment number one, seeing none, we'll adopt amendment number one. And I will, unless anybody else wants to posit the instructions, move conceptual amendment number two, instructing the drafter, if need be, to make sure the provisions of the immobilization on the second offense and any forfeiture provides for the protection of an innocent co-owner or lien holder and so forth, that those interests will be protected. Any further instructions from anybody? Any objections to conceptual amendment number two? Seeing none, we'll adopt that. Mr. Guinelli, you had some suggestions.
Mr. Chairman, there are a couple of what I would consider technical amendments that I would propose to the committee. The first is, sorry, I haven't had extensive amount of time to review the bill, but I did catch a couple of things. On page 17, line 9, there's some new language proposed. It's bold and underlined, except as provided under, et cetera, the subsection. I think that is language that previously applied to the SIS diversion for .08 and now really doesn't apply here at all. In fact, there is no 1A little I anymore. So
that was third party issue, right? That was
the diversion.
This was
the diversion.
The diversion.
I'm sorry,
so I think that language that's in bold and underlined should just be stricken.
Okay, let's assuming this is the diversion program, we'll move to, as conceptual amendment number 3, to remove the language on lines 9 and 10 of page 17. Any objections? Seeing none, we'll adopt conceptual amendment number 3. Mr. Guadagnoli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then on page 24, it's section 39. And this is the provision. We had a good discussion of it on Saturday that allowed additional testing for, allowed testing pursuant to a search warrant. And the scenario I gave was where the intoximeter machine wasn't working. And what I've been told by the DA here in town or just over the weekend is that there's another situation that arises, and that is where the breathalyzer machine actually is working, and the person blows into the machine and they blow a zero or a point, 001, and so there's nothing there. And what that means is they're under the influence of something else. And in those circumstances, I think it's also appropriate that the police be allowed to call up a judge, describe the circumstances, and get authorization for some other testing. So the language that, because I think it's important, I mean, the breath machine is only really good for alcohol, and you need some other type of test for these other substances. And so what I would propose is that at the end of line 9, there'd be instead of a period, a comma, and it says, in addition to a test permitted by this section. So it would read, nothing in this section shall be construed to limit searches pursuant to warrant, in addition to a test permitted by this section. What at least one judge in Juneau has done is said, if they take the breath test, that's all you get. I mean, you don't get an opportunity to do any further testing because that's what's permitted by statute. And I think that additional language makes it clear that there are going to be rare circumstances where it is appropriate to do an additional test pursuant to a warrant.
Well, what's the procedure now if there's a drug controlled substance abuse intoxication? How do you test for that now?
Well, I think that in most areas of the state we would be going after a warrant to do that. I mean, I think in a lot of circumstances the person might be going to the hospital and the hospital is going to take some blood. I mean, if there's
right.
if they're really seriously under the influence of a narcotic, but in those where they aren't required to go to the hospital, I mean, the only thing we can do is get a warrant. And so this section, to the extent it allows warrants, I think that's good. But to the extent that a judge has ruled that once you've used a breathalyzer machine, you can't do anything, any further testing, I think we need this language that says, in addition to a test permitted by this section.
Well, that certainly doesn't seem appropriate if there's the dual, what's the term of art, you're duly affected by not only alcohol but other controlled substances.
Right. It's really the only way we can get the evidence of that.
Any discussion of this, Representative Berglund?
I'm kind of curious what the judge's ruling was here in Juneau and how judges in other parts of the state have ruled on it, because I sort of hate to pass a law based on a single anecdote.
Mr. Chairman, the basis for the judge's ruling was the implied consent statute is here, and that tells you what tests you can use, and you can't use anything more. I honestly don't know whether other judges have ruled that way in other parts of the state. I only found out about it this weekend. I haven't really had a time to canvass the rest of the state to find out whether that's being used. But I think that it doesn't do any harm to add that clause in here. And again, as long as there are the other protections of the search warrant are available, I think that it doesn't hurt to have the additional clause.
Mm. And logically, because the test is permitted in the section, Representative Berkowitz.
If the other protection of the search warrant are in place, which they necessarily would be, then this would be unnecessary to add. It seems to me that in seeking a warrant to draw blood, you're seeking that warrant in order to obtain evidence. Is that correct? And there's provision under search warrant procedure to do that now.
Mr. Chairman, all I can tell you is that the position of the presiding judge in Juneau was that once you've used the breath test, you can't do any follow-up testing.
And is that under appeal?
Mr. Chairman, those kinds of decisions cannot be, strictly speaking, they cannot be appealed. A petition can be lodged with the Court of Appeals, and it's discretionary. I don't know whether there was a petition lodged in that case. Ordinarily, we, on matters like that, we wouldn't take a petition, particularly when it's one judge. But
well, Mr. Grinnell, it seems to me that it's the responsibility of this committee to make sure that the law is applied evenly in all judicial districts of the state, notwithstanding a particular ruling somewhere.
I agree with that, Mr. Chairman.
I mean, this maybe calls out for clarification, I would think.
Well, it may or may not. What Mr. Grinnelli is asking us to do is based on a single instance in Juneau without knowing what the rulings have been in other parts of the state, without having let the judicial process run its course, for us to intercede. And I know how frustrated we get when the judges jump in before we're done doing our business. I think we got to let the judges do their business, and then if there's still a problem, take another look at it. But
you, Mr. Grinnelli, know how long that ruling and that procedure, which would affect law enforcement in this community and elsewhere in this district, has been in effect?
I don't. I could find out from the DA. I don't know how long that has been in effect. My impression was that it was something fairly recent, because the DA just came and saw me over the weekend to mention that to me.
Mr. Chairman, could you just rehearse one more time the language so I don't miscomment on it?
Page line 9, page 24, adding in addition to a test permitted by this section. Is that correct, Mr. Grinnell?
That's correct.
I suppose the question that comes to mind is, how many times can that happen? I'm looking to the principle of the matter of if somebody wanted to impose on somebody else multiple tests. And that's what I'm wondering, is this a tool that could be misused? Not only do we want to help catch people that are doing wrong, but many times these things can be used to ways and intimidate people as well. And I'm just wondering, are we going in that direction?
Mr. Chairman, I think that, first of all, the kind of evidence that comes from these tests is evidence that dissipates over a period of time, and so it's something that we've got to do fairly quickly. So that's I think one factor that would limit any kind of harassment, if that was where your question was going. I think the other thing is that a single blood test is useful to screen for a number of substances. I mean, it's good for alcohol and narcotics, et cetera. So there's really no need. I mean, if we went to a judge and say, well, now we want to do something else, the judge is going to say, well, you got a blood test. Isn't that good for other things? So I don't think I don't think as a practical matter that really can happen.
Mr. Chairman, I can understand that, but And I won't defend any of my buddies that smoke marijuana, but sometimes they have things in their blood that are not actually impairing them at the time. And are we going to start looking for those types of things?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a valid point. I think that the kinds of residual amounts of drugs that can remain in your system, might very well show up on a test, but I think that they would show up as kind of residual background amounts and not be at the kind of level that that would intoxicate somebody. I mean, we're really looking for, higher levels of cocaine or heroin or even marijuana, rather than the trace amounts. And I think it's a matter of some expert or chemist then testifying that this amount in a person's blood would result. I mean, we would have to, in addition to having, see, with alcohol, we've got the presumptions under the law, and we've now set the presumption, at least in this bill, at 0.08 and 0.04. But between these levels, there's one presumption, etc. For us to use blood and deal with marijuana or cocaine or something else, we not only have to have the blood test, we have to have an expert come in and interpret that and say what that result means in terms of affecting somebody. And I mean, the dealing with controlled substances and driving is difficult. I mean, it's not something that's easy to do. And so we need a number of steps to go through. We've got to jump through a number of hoops before we could really successfully prosecute somebody. But I think that when we can jump through those hoops, when we can provide the evidence that links the blood test result with the likely effect on somebody's driving, and then the officer saying what the driving actually was, I think it's appropriate that we be allowed to do that.
Representative James, then Berkowitz.
Well, you almost said the words that I was thinking about that haven't been being mentioned, is that the reason why the person is before you in the first place is because of some behavioral thing that indicated that they were not in control of themselves. And let's assume then that you did a breathalyzer and they were not at 0.08, but they were showing signs of some other influence in their body that's causing them to behave in an erratic manner or not so to be in control of themselves. Now, isn't that the kind of presentation that you'd have to make to be able to get a search warrant? I mean, if you didn't have any of those kinds of things, I assume that you wouldn't be able to get one, or that you might not even try.
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly right. I mean, we'd have to not only show bad driving and show that the breathalyzer result was zero or close to zero, but we'd also have to tell the judge that there are some other indications.
Slurring your speech,
or
eyes look glassy,
eyes look a certain way, or wobbly, that sort of thing. So I think there are.
Question to that point, Mr. Chairman, is that under the probable cause test?
Through the chair, that's correct. That's what we'd have to show.
President Berger.
Couple points. Say, for example, you found evidence of other drug use. Seems to me that that individual could be charged for possession of that drug based on its presence in probably his bloodstream. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, we can prosecute people for drug possession, for having it in their bloodstream, if we have other evidence of how it got there, that there was some use, or we find syringes or something else. The case law is the mere fact of having it in your bloodstream is not enough for us to prosecute somebody. There's got to be some indication of how it got there, that you weren't somebody didn't slip it into your drink or something like that. So I mean, there's an additional step we have to go through to prove a possession charge.
The reckless follow-up.
Pardon? Yeah. The follow-up is, so there's also possibilities that people who blow under a 0.08 and yet have demonstrated signs of impairment might indeed not have any other substances in their bloodstream. I mean, they might be ill, they might have been adjusting a radio. At what point do we tell law enforcement that you can't pursue this any further?
Mr. Chairman, I think that there's a lot of training that goes into being a law enforcement officer, and particularly surrounding driving people under the influence. I think most officers have seen an awful lot if they've been on road patrol for even a fairly short period of time. And I think at some point you have to leave it to discretion to be able to tell when, leave it to the officer to be able to tell when somebody is just sleepy, or they've been working all night, they're just getting off work, or if they're sick or something like that, or if they have a sprained ankle or can't. I mean, I think you just have to rely on them to make those kind of judgment calls. We rely on them to make those kind of judgment calls in applying for any other type of search warrant in any other type of case. And I think that I think that it's really appropriate that we continue to rely on them for this narrow class of cases.
Representative James.
Right. Well, you know, and my concern also is that there's an awful lot of medications that that have been prescribed to folks who specifically says do not to consume any alcohol, and sometimes just a little alcohol will make a profound difference in the way that the prescription has affected you. You know, I suppose that you could say, well, I'm not guilty of anything bad, except you've been told not to have alcohol with it, number one, and if you're not in condition to be driving a vehicle, then it is your problem, you know. So I don't know how those would be dealt with, but I assume that that may be some of the cases.
I think that's absolutely right.
Representative Bergwood.
Yeah, just two comments, really. First of all, this amendment, it's we're trying to fix a problem that we don't know whether it really truly exists, whether there is some kind of judicial impediment to obtaining these kind of warrants. And secondly, we're doing this without the kind of, I think, full and fair evidentiary hearing that would normally, at least in a judicial context, accompany a constitutional question. We're doing it without, to this point, hearing from folks who might have an opposing viewpoint. And I'm very uncomfortable tinkering with the Fourth Amendment in this way.
Well, I appreciate your point. I do value the credibility of Mr. Guinelli, number one. Number two, I'm not as concerned about the constitutionality, given that the tests are already provided in the section and we already have provision for them. I think the question is more than one methodology is the issue here.
The constitutionality goes right to this. That's why the court...
Once we have a test, it's just the type of test or methodology, I think, is what we're discussing here, in my opinion.
Not the
heart of the constitutional issue.
Mr. Guinelli can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed to me the basis for denying a warrant would be that it was be considered an unreasonable search, an unreasonable seizure.
Okay. Well, that's not what we're talking about in the amendment, I don't think.
No, we really aren't, Mr. Chairman. All of this is based on really on statutory construction. I mean, there are courts that are construing the implied consent law, the law that allows us to take breath tests, and construing that in a limited way to preclude administration of other types of tests, even pursuant to warrant. And that's what I think this very simple provision says, that, you know, basically telling the courts you can't construe the statute that way. That's not what was intended by the legislature. And I think it's as simple as that.
But we're construing this within the context of the Fourth Amendment. It's a warrant question.
Well, I would disagree. I think it's a matter of the test methodology and the number of tests that can be given that are already authorized by statute. Representative James.
Well, Mr. Chairman, certainly we're talking about the Fourth Amendment, but we're also talking about a judiciary decision on this. You know, it seems to me like it's still discretionary to the judge in this case as to whether or not a search and seizure is allowed for this. It seems to me like certainly the judiciary is going to be concerned about Fourth Amendment rights.
But what this amendment would have us do would be to overturn or take away the judiciary's discretion to view cases on a case-by-case basis. And we haven't even seen the Juneau Court's decision in this, much less investigated whether or not any of the other districts have looked at the question and see if they've come to the same or different rulings.
Well, I don't want to spend enough time on this. I think not if it's a constitutional question, as Representative Berkowitz points out. But I think in terms of intrastate judicial opinion, I think we have, and what I perceive to be the intent of the proposed amendment. So I'd suggest that the committee wishes to adopt the amendment, which I do. I'll work with Representative Berkowitz and the Attorney General to make sure that we get further clarification on this, so we don't end up debating it on the floor, just so you're satisfied.
Don't deprive me of all my pleasures, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sure you'll find plenty of issues in which to, we can have a good dialogue and discourse on the floor. So,
I'm speaking of Representative Berkowitz, I think he would promise not to debate it if he would promise not to amend it.
What, the whole bill?
On the floor.
Representative Kukesh, if you can want to be my counsel and make a deal with me, Well, what's the wish of the committee? I think we, have we made it, has anybody moved this amendment? Well, I'll move the amendment.
I still object.
I'll just take this number four.
Right, I'll move amendment, conceptual amendment number four, lines, or page 24, line 9, deleting period, adding comma, in addition to a test permitted by this section, period. And there's an objection, and will the secretary read the roll?
Representative Berkowitz.
No.
Representative Kukesh.
Aye. No.
Representative James.
Yes.
Representative Ogun is absent. Representative Coghill.
Yes.
Representative Meyer.
Yes.
Representative Roper.
Yes.
4-2.
The amendment passes, but I'll be happy to, if there's further information on this, to take it before the Finance Committee and as an amendment from the committee. And Mr. Guinelli, if you could satisfy Mr. Berkowitz, I'll give you the dead job.
I will do that.
I'm going to take all these mad dogs off my back.
I will certainly do that.
Right. Mr. Guinelli, do you have any other?
No, I have nothing else.
Well, glory be. Okay. Is there any further comments before we move this bill? Does anybody on the committee want to make a comment? Representative Coghill.
Just a question on page 19 and 28.
Fire away.
Maybe I'm getting rummy on this bill, but the section N there talks about somebody who'd been previously convicted two times, and then goes about and says the court shall, and then impose a fine, and then it goes down through the list of when you've been previously convicted. It seemed like a mismatch to me. It helped me understand that. It looks like we're saying if you're convicted, and then we go step back and say there are minimum sentences for.
Well, it depends if it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's
convicted four.
If you keep showing up there before the judge, each offense has a different.
So the bar starts at two or more times at this point.
Yeah, this
so
is the Class C felony.
Above.
Yeah, it's Class C felony, which is the current law now.
And not everyone fits. I mean, not all third offenses become a felony because of when
the look back
prior might have occurred.
That's right. So we have a line of misdemeanors, and we have a line of felonies.
And you'll be able to just got a glimpse of how I am in this bill. My footing is not real sure.
I know, but just to repeat that, I don't know if everybody heard that Ms. Seitz is going to be preparing a reading guide. Half of this bill is the mirroring of the consent, implied consent, which is a duplicative. And then another major portion is just the redefinition to include inhalants and maintaining the DUI standard. So we'll give you a sectional like with the reading guide so you can skip a lot of it when you read the bill, and then we'll do and I'll provide every committee member with the package we sent out to finance, which will have talking points that basically lead you to the bill as well as the sectional. So you'll be able to review it all, and if you do have any other further problems with it, please bring it to my attention. I expect to hopefully by taking this up at the end of the week, but then I don't think the bill will move on the first hearing up there.
Well, I won't object to moving it. Right. But my letter of recommendation will go with my recommendation.
Right, no. I would just one thing I would like to mention to all the agencies before we take this up and move it is that the issue regarding the calculation of the 0.08 BAC, I think that we have had sufficient evidence from the Department of Public Safety to demonstrate that the experience in the state of Alaska on the actual and the actual data we have that we've had brought before the committee is that they should use the 5% increase in BAC 0.8 apprehensions, not the 10% or 10 or 15%, when calculating their fiscal notes, or if they have problems with that, to at least do them both ways, because I'm going to recommend that to the Finance Committee. If you don't deliver that type of a fiscal note based on this committee substitute, that will lower the, I think that that is a, that we've had sufficient evidence to go with that, and I just want to caution everybody when they're developing their fiscal notes.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative James.
I would move CS for House Bill number 4, judiciary of number B out as amended with individual
And amended.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, thank you very much. So ordered. And the Judiciary Committee is adjourned at 1 after 12. Flip that thing out.